Welcome back to KSCJ Radio, 1360 AM, 94.9 FM in Sioux City, Iowa. I'm Brian Vikalskis, and this is Having Read That, conversations with authors about their books.
My guest is Louis Byard, who is the author of the brand new novel Courting Mr. Lincoln. It is a historical novel. It is set in the 19th century, and it details basically a love triangle between Abraham Lincoln, Mary Todd, who would go on to be both his wife and the First Lady, and Joshua Speed, who we will learn a little bit about throughout this interview. Louis, when you set about to write a historical novel, I know historical novelists take a look at the historical record. What historical record is available from this time period in Abraham Lincoln's life that you were able to even consult?
Well, I'll tell you what, the first thing that I looked at, or the stuff that really made me want to write the book, was a series of letters that Abraham Lincoln wrote to Joshua Speed in the months before, leading up to Joshua Speed's wedding. And I was reading these fascinating letters, which seemed to reveal to me two men who were kind of coaxing and coaching each other toward what we would now call a heteronormative lifestyle. They were in effect saying, you can do this. You can handle the wedding night. I know you can do this. So that's how I interpreted them anyway. And that created a really interesting dimension to what would otherwise have been a relatively straightforward courtship novel between Abraham Lincoln and the woman who would become his wife, Mary Todd.
Well, I thought it was interesting to read about Mary Todd's lineage, where she came from. How did she get to Illinois, where she eventually met Abraham Lincoln?
Yeah, she was from Kentucky aristocracy. She followed her older sister there. Her older sister had married an Illinois politician, but there was, in fact, this whole diaspora of Kentucky folks who were going north to Illinois. Springfield, of course, had just become Illinois' capital, and they brought with it some of the same social stratification of Kentucky society. So even on this raw frontier town, there was an upper class, and there was this place called Quality Hill, which is where Ninian's brother and Mary Todd's sister and brother-in-law lived. So and there were these, you know, these social codes and mores that had to be observed. So in comes this fairly raw specimen named Abraham Lincoln, and part of the book is how he learns to become a more polished version of himself.
So when Mary Todd arrives, who is Joshua Speed to Mr. Lincoln?
Joshua Speed is, well, first of all, he owns the store, the dry goods store over which Lincoln sleeps, but they also share a bed. They will share a bed for 3.5 years. The customary caveats rush in at this point, and bachelors often shared beds in those days. What I think distinguishes these two bachelors is the degree of their closeness, as I was sort of alluding to earlier. They had a very intense friendship. They were inseparable. And it seems clear in retrospect that they were, in effect, preventing each other from getting married. And Speed would later say that no two men were closer. He would also say that that Lincoln would never have gotten married if he himself hadn't. So it is, they were, as Joshua Speed was the person to whom Lincoln was closest with emotionally over the course of his entire life, I would say. And I think most historians would agree.
Now, Lincoln is riding the circuit, trying cases in different communities at this time, right?
Right, right.
So as he does this, does Joshua accompany him?
No, Joshua stays home. And minds his store, literally minds his own store. So, yes, this is a very solitary occupation that Lincoln would just hop on a horse and ride from county to county, set up shop in front of every county courthouse, and troll for business. That was how he made the bulk of his money as a lawyer. And it was so he'd be gone for really months at a time. And it became an issue later on when he did get married. And Mary Todd Lincoln, in fact, was a single mother for good chunks of the year because he was gone for so much of it.
As the character of Mary Todd is developed in the book, it runs against the grain of what I think a lot of people, and at least what I thought. I always heard she was crazy and kind of a nut, but she comes off as a very normal person in her essentially her youth here.
Yeah, that's one of the nice things about setting the book in 1841, 1842, when it's set, is you catch Mary at her very best. And when you go back into the record and look at contemporary accounts of her, you find that she's not that person you thought. She's not the shrew and the spendthrift and the madwoman. She's this very attractive, very spirited and intelligent, unusually well-educated for her era, and somebody with a great passion for politics. She was looking for a candidate to marry, and she was interested in power. So she found him. And it's really, I think, to her credit that she chose Lincoln, because I'm not sure anybody else would have. He was not on anybody's short list to become president within the next 20 years. He wasn't even considered the leading politician of Springfield, Illinois. But somehow or other, she divined his potential, and I think that speaks well to her.
What did Lincoln think of her as far as making her a life partner?
You know, I think their relationship was complicated. I think he really valued her as an advisor and as a partner in this political enterprise. One of the revealing remarks he made, I think, was the night of the 1860 presidential election. And when he learned he won, the first words out of his mouth were, "Mary, Mary, we have been elected." So that to me suggests that it was always a united effort in his mind. And there were people who knew them both who said Mary was sort of the engine behind his political career, that he might not have achieved what he did without her force and willpower behind him.
As you write the book in alternating perspectives versus Mary Todd and Joshua Speed, I would imagine it's somewhat easier to get into Mary Todd's head than it would be Joshua Speed, or did you find one easier than the other?
That's interesting. I thought you were going to go the other direction, because I think the immediate assumption is that it's going to be harder to do the cross-gender bridge of empathy. But no, I found them both, I think they were both equally challenging but equally doable in a way. And it comes from just, as I said, that bridge of empathy, just trying to understand what's going on. I mean, Mary is more acutely vulnerable in her life, but Joshua has his own vulnerabilities too, and that's kind of what you need to find in a character, I think, in order to inhabit them. I mean, to find those places where they're a little bit wounded. The one character I didn't feel like I could inhabit was Lincoln, and that's because he himself was so enigmatic in life. Even the people who knew him never felt like they really knew him, and I realized it'd be better for the book to sort of keep him a little bit more at a distance and have the characters and have the reader try to figure out what's going on inside him.
I'm chatting with Louis Byard, who is the author of the brand new novel Courting Mr. Lincoln. It is available now wherever your fine books are sold from the good folks at Algonquin Books of Chapel Hill. I love that name for a publisher. It's great. Louis, as Abraham Lincoln develops himself through here, you have a scene in the book where the two of them meet at essentially a social gathering in Springfield, and it almost has hints of love at first sight, but not really. I mean, you can feel it in their eyes. But the historical record, I've always heard that story where, you know, Lincoln said, "I want to dance with you in the worst way possible," and Mary Todd Lincoln later said she did, or he did just that.
That's exactly how he did, yes. Exactly. That is straight from the record. Yeah.
But the
my feeling was that it would have been a very awkward first meeting, and that it wouldn't have kind of necessarily been love at first sight. It would have taken some time to get used to a character like Lincoln. I mean, just think of how he would have appeared. First of all, he was so tall, 6'4", and she was closer to 5'2". And of course, so unusual looking, that I think she would have needed some time to kind of wrap around the idea of him.
As far as her family goes, what did her family think of Lincoln, Mary Todd's family?
They did not care for him, which is interesting to me. They did not think he was the right match for her. I think they admired him at a certain level because he was a statesman. He was an orator of natural gifts. But they felt also that he was a rather cold individual, and that's sometimes the word you will hear applied to Lincoln by people who knew him, is that, you know, he could be very reticent. And I think that was maybe one of the themes of their marriage, was you had this woman who, in Mary Todd, who really did need a lot of affection. She referred to at one point in my book as a thirsty lily. And you have a guy named Lincoln, in the person of Lincoln, who is not able to kind of give that in a regular stream, you know, is not going to be effusive and sentimental. So that was sort of one of the tension points, I think, in their marriage.
the story has been around for years that Abraham Lincoln may have been gay, and it comes up all the time. Is there anything in the historical record that actually points to that? I mean, you've probably researched this more than anybody.
Yeah, I mean, it's really more a matter of interpreting the evidence that's sort of in hiding in plain sight. When I speak of the letters, for instance, that Lincoln wrote to Speed, I mean, it seems to suggest an unusual intensity. We look at, you know, the fact that they're sharing the bed-sharing arrangement, which went on for some time. And it's you know, I don't think the... I'm trying to back up, think a little here. Because as long ago as the 1920s, Carl Sandburg, who was Lincoln's great popular biographer at the time, suggested that there was a hint of lavender about these guys. As that was the phrase he used, to quote, a hint of lavender. But really, it's only been the last, I'd say, 20, 30 years that historians have really started looking at the nature of what this relationship was. Why did Lincoln, for instance, demand that Speed write him the day after the wedding night to tell him how it had gone? That's a strange thing to ask of somebody who's just a friend to you. So historians have really started looking at it finally in a much more intensive way, and it was inspired by a book called C.A. Tripp called The Intimate World of Abraham Lincoln, which came out in 2005. And I felt that the fictional, the cultural representations of Lincoln have been lagging behind. So it seemed to be a high time to kind of put that front and center in a full-length novel. I will just add, though, that Will and Grace recently had a whole thing involving Abraham Lincoln, the character of Jack, doing this little play. So it treats the same issue, but in a much more ridiculous, silly, farcical way. But it's a sign that an idea is starting to take hold in a culture when a show like Will and Grace embraces it.
How much of Lincoln's relationship with Speed could be attributed to the fact that Lincoln was probably fairly lonely at this time?
How much of his loneliness? I don't know. I mean, he did have other friends. He did have other associates. As I said, he was on the road a lot, but he also fraternized quite a lot with the other lawyers and judges, too, on the road. They would stay in inns sometimes, you know, 10 men to a bed or something. So he was around a lot of people, so I don't know that loneliness explains their relationship in particular. I think that there was something that they found in each other, and they found it, you talked earlier about love at first sight. The famous story was Lincoln, when he first came to Springfield, this would have been 1837, he literally had nothing but a horse and two saddlebags. He was deeply in debt, and he wanders into Joshua Speed's store and asks how much a bed would be. And then when he realizes it's way beyond his price range, but Speed is somehow so touched by his plight or by the look of sadness on his face, because, of course, Lincoln was a very depressive character, that he impulsively offers him his own bed to share. And Lincoln goes upstairs, checks it out, and comes back and says, "Why, Speed, I am moved." Which had a double meaning. It meant he was already moving in at that point. So that story comes to us from history, and that has, in my mind, a kind of you could give it a romantic scene, or you could make it look like just one guy helping another guy out. That's the thing about this evidence. There's never going to be a smoking gun. There's never going to be a DNA test, you know, that's going to prove it one way or another. A few years ago, there were rumors that some lost diary or lost letters of Joshua Speed had been found that proved the relationship happened. I think Larry Kramer claimed to have found them, which turned out to be a hoax. I don't think we're ever going to find those things. So it's just a matter of looking what's already there and bring our interpretations to it.
I know in addition to writing your novels, you also review books from time to time. I read them in the Washington Post, your reviews. And as I read book reviews, whether it's Washington Post, New York Times, LA Times, whatever, it doesn't seem like there's any book reviews that are published that just completely pan a book. So when you take about to write a book review, have you already read the book and liked it and decided to write a review, or how does that process work?
No, the book is usually assigned to me before I've even opened the book. I'm already committed to writing it. There have been a couple times I can think of where I just said to my editor at whatever paper it was that, you know, this is just not my kind of book for whatever reason. It's a genre I don't particularly care for. I just don't feel that I'm the right person for this. I can recall two or three instances where I wrote a pretty bad pan of a book, and in one case heard back from the husband of the author. But I find that the experience of being on the other side of that, being an author myself, being reviewed on all these outlets, really makes me sensitive to wanting to do that. I don't want to be the one who does, you know, the gratuitous swipes that I think a lot of reviewers make their name from. I feel like, God, I don't want to, you know, take 800 words to urinate all over something that somebody's been working for 2 or 3 years on. Now, that doesn't mean I'm not honest in my reactions. I am. But I'm also trying to find the good where I can and to be a constructive force in our culture, because I feel like there's so much denigration, not just in book reviewing, but all around us, that it's up to a critic to sort of speak in ways that are constructive and that advance the dialogue.
Well, I think of it sometimes as when I see who published authors reviewing other books, it's probably bad karma to urinate on another person's work. But at the same time, I think only authors are probably qualified to review these types of, to review books because only they know the process.
Well, that's interesting. That's interesting. There's an old saying, you don't have to be a chicken to know a rotten egg, but because I think most movie reviewers, for instance, have never made movies themselves, or very, I would say, a relatively small percentage have. So that really raises an interesting question of, you know, who is qualified to pass judgment. Of course, now in our culture today, anyone can pass judgment. An Amazon review, a Goodreads review, you know, Yelp, whatever. There are no more gatekeepers, in effect. So we've also declared ourselves experts on everything in some way or other. So it's really an act of conservatism to say, no, there still should be gatekeepers. There still should be people who, as you say, have a certain knowledge of this particular craft and can apply that knowledge to the act of judging it. But I think we may be losing that battle.
All right. Well, this book is called Courting Mr. Lincoln. It's the brand new historical novel from Louis Byard. The book is available now wherever fine books are sold. It's a great insight. And if you've never read any of his historical novels, pick them up. He's got a great one about Edgar Allan Poe that I picked up and read a couple of years ago, and it's just fantastic. But this one's...
Oh, yeah, The Pale Blue Eyes.
Blue Eyes. Yeah, that was a great book. So anyway, Louis, fantastic book here about Mr. Lincoln. Thanks for joining us to talk about it.
Thank you so much.
This has been Having Read That on KSCJ Radio in Sioux City, Iowa. I'm Brian Vikalskis. Check out all of our episodes on our website, kscj.com. Also, be sure to like Having Read That on Facebook and subscribe to our iTunes podcast. Thanks to segment producer John Weisler. We will be back next time.
Anybody here seen my old friend Abraham? Can you tell me where he